So we're in the book of Mark. We've been, for those that just visiting and whatnot, we've been covering discipleship. We went through 26 lessons of discipleship over the last 7 months. And now we're going to start going through the book of Mark, not verse by verse, but we will do expository through the book of Mark to look at more applications of what we talked about. We're going to be talking about the call of the disciples today. So I'm not going to bore you to death with pictures or anything, but we're just going to cover them very quickly. And Capernaum, some say Capernaum, some say Capernaum. Jesus' home base right here, okay, in the north of the Sea of Galilee. Some of you have probably been to Israel. You've been to the Sea of Galilee. I had the privilege of going 1 year, and this is my favorite area of Israel. There's a lot to... But, you know, you're like, wow, that's favorite, but this really is, for me, my favorite. The Jordan River comes in here. It's a natural spring, and it shoots out a pipe about this big there. They've got it running out of a pipe, and it aerates the water in the north of the Sea of Galilee, so the fishing is great in the north part of Galilee, and hence, you got a lot of fishing camps here. Peter was a fisherman, of course, and there, this we're going to burn through these quick. They do a lot of, you know, acting out different things at different times of the year in Israel, of course. This is a mock-up of perhaps what it might have looked like in Jesus' day. The shore is very beautiful. The Sea of Galilee is a little bit of a misnomer. It looks like a huge lake when you're up high. It's 7 miles by 14 miles. So it's not very big when you... talking about a sea, but nevertheless, Sea of Galilee. It's the lowest point of fresh water on the face of the planet. The Dead Sea is the lowest point of salt water on the face of the planet, save the oceans. It's actually, wait a minute, it's actually lower than the oceans. Yeah, by an incredible amount, 1,500 feet or 2,000 feet. Forgot about that for a second. But it's very pretty there. I'll slow down if you want. I'm just going to burn through some of these. Obviously, when it's calm, it's very nice. The Mount Arbol is like 2,000 feet above the Sea of Galilee, and then the Sea of Galilee drops like 500 feet below sea level. So you have a lot of storms that build. So when you read that the disciples were frightened, the reason why is because storms just pop up over the Sea of Galilee very quickly because of the mountainous terrain and then the desert behind it.
It's pretty.
Yeah, very pretty there.
And on the left?
It's some rocks. Yeah, it's just rocks. So here you have... Capernaum, a couple things I would point out. Peter's house, we know where Peter's house was because they had a church there for about a century after the Lord resurrected. So even longer perhaps, I'm not sure, but it was a known site for a very long time. So, you know, if they would allow, they won't allow you. You could actually walk into old Peter's house even today, the ruins of it. And the synagogue, this synagogue was in the Byzantine period around the year 300. But the foundation of that synagogue was first century. And I'll show you a picture of that in just a second. They built this hideous flying saucer-looking thing over Peter's house because they give control to different churches. And this is a Franciscan order that has control over Peter's house. And they built this hideous monstrosity over it. There's the synagogue. And you can see that's that building I was telling you. It's actually a church, but... It was built in the 70s. It looks like a flying saucer. This was before they built that building, so it's an older picture. There's the building I was telling you about. These are just ruins of houses around Peter's. It's right near the coast, maybe, I don't know, from here to the sign, church sign out front is the water. There's the remaining ruins of the Peter's house.
Were they combined, or was all that area?
Yes. Some of them might have been the Jewish culture. Usually, you had four room houses. one kitchen, one what we would consider a living room, and then two other rooms. But that wasn't always the case. Sometimes if you had a younger family, you might not have four rooms. But the four-room house is actually very particular to the Jewish tradition. So you're probably looking at four houses there, perhaps. But, you know, it's a little bit liquid. You know, sometimes the ruins don't tell the whole story. But they typically would take advantage of someone else's wall in a congested area. You know, so there's a synagogue. Now, this is not the one Jesus would have been teaching in. Again, this is about three centuries later. But you get the idea of how they, benches, they built them out of stone. Now, this is the foundation from Jesus' day. And it obviously it was in such good shape, they just built right on top of it. Some millstones of Jesus' day. This is a commercial model. This is more for home use here. And a statue of Peter. All right, so let us open our Bibles then to Mark chapter 1. Somebody read, after everybody gets there, Mark chapter 1. Somebody read verses 16 through 20, please.
As he was going along by the Sea of Galilee, he saw Simon and Andrew, the brother of Simon, casting a net in the sea, for they were fishermen. And Jesus said to them, "Follow me, and I will make you become fishers of men." Immediately they left their nets and followed him. Going on a little further, he saw James, the son of Zebedee, and John, his brother, who were also in the boat, mending their nets. Immediately he called them, and they left their father Zebedee in the boat with the hired servants and went away to follow him.
All right. So we know that, and you can write this scripture down if you want. John 1, 35 through 49. The disciples that are called here already had interactions with Jesus. They already knew who he was. They already had said he was Messiah. Jesus had spent, some scholars believe, up to a year doing ministry before he even called one disciple. Oftentimes we think that he called his disciples and started his ministry. And that's surely not true. There was some time before he called any disciples. The time is debated, though, but some say up to a year, some say no, more like 3 months. But you really can't, there's no way to nail that down in my view. I've looked at the evidence. I don't see anything to where you can say absolutely it was 359 days. You can't do that. So,
can you tell about how long it was once he started calling him from the first to the last?
No, that's debated too, although we believe that some of these disciples here were called on the same day. But generally that they believe that they were called within a certain time frame, like a week or two.
Oh.
But that all that stuff's debated, you know, and you have different accounts in the Gospels, makes it unclear on, because people are telling the story from their point of view and whatnot. So it's very hard, but one of the things you see, when you, if you want to map out Jesus' ministry in a pattern, so to speak, is he rose to popularity the first year. He called his disciples. He continued to rise to popularity. What was the event where he became unpopular? What was the event where he became unpopular?
Eat my flesh,
drink my blood. Okay? So this is the year of decline in his ministry, the last year. When the people thought he was talking about cannibalism, the 5,000 took off and his ministry started to decline, ultimately declining, quote unquote, to the cross, his greatest victory. Welcome. So the disciples, some say the disciples were called about here. Some say, no, it was about here. Again, for me, I don't see, you know, I'm not going to say when they were called, I don't know. But obviously, they knew they had said he was Messiah. They really had placed their trust in him. They were already saved individuals. So this is not the call of salvation, this is the call to discipleship. And that's important to know. Zebedee was, he had hired servants. He was a businessman. Obviously, if he had hired servants, his business was doing well. He had his sons involved. This would have been probably the middle class of their day, so to speak. A couple of things I want to mark out, though. The call, Mark sets the tone, the nature, and the purpose of discipleship. Mark sets the tone, the nature, and the purpose of discipleship. First thing that jumps out at you, what is it? What's one thing that jumps out at you in regard to the disciples' response? Something ought to jump out for sure. One thing, at least.
Immediately.
Yeah, immediately. Yeah, Mark says immediately. Does it remind you of another patriarch in the Old Testament? Immediately?
Abraham.
Yeah, Abraham, good. Yeah, early the next morning, he got up to sacrifice his son. Early the next morning, he left his homeland. The only proper response to a holy God is immediate response. Immediate. And how do we struggle with that, huh? How do we struggle with that? But immediate is the only, it's the best response. Now, Jesus did say, he used a parable that said, people who change their mind and obey later, they still follow his will, right? I don't know if you recall that parable, or that teaching. But here, immediately ought to stand out to us. And that's how we ought to respond to God in our life. Normally, also, people sought out a rabbi. The Jewish culture was highly influenced by the who? By the who? Hellenists. By the
Greeks.
Alexander the Great had swept through the area, conquered the known world from Greece to India, brought the language, customs, brought Aristotle, Plato's ideas. All that was the rage. The Romans highly respected the Greeks' intellect and their history with philosophy. They were very respected in that regard. So people sought out to be taught. But here you see the teacher seeking out his students. And that's something else that people sometimes may not know the backstory on. But Jesus already had an open breach. The persecution from the Jewish authorities had already started. And these disciples were called in that context. He had already started. Jesus rubbed people the wrong way. Have you ever noticed that in the scriptures? If they didn't like something, you're healing on the Sabbath. The next few scriptures are always, on the Sabbath he healed again. On the Sabbath, you know, it's like rubbing salt in people's eyes. Jesus did, he did what was proper, he did what was right, and it often flew in the face of those around him who said, this is spiritual. Jesus would say, no, this is spiritual. So he was already on the outs with all the rabbis when the disciples were called. And fishers of men is an interesting phrase. I didn't really know this. I studied this week. I'd always thought that was kind of a Christian phrase, but come to find out it's not. It's more of a Greek phrase. And it was a phrase that was popular with the philosophers teaching their students. They would say, I'm going to make you a fisher of men. I'm going to help you to learn how to change people's minds. Come on in. Welcome. Welcome. I won't give you a hard time because I gave Jeff a hard time last week, so I don't want to overdo it, even though I wanted to. See, that's me listening and responding immediately. Y'all are a little bit either uptight or lackadaisical today. I don't know what it is. All right. I'm moving on. We're going to cruise through this material. So fishers of men was... the idea of philosophers wanting to capture the mind of their students. But Jesus here used it for fishermen. And obviously he meant to go out and reach into people's lives and pull them out from lostness, if you will, from incorrect thinking for those that were knew God but yet didn't think properly. All those ideas. It was discipleship motivated, though. Come, I will make you fishers of men. I'm going to teach you how to fish properly. Then you're going to turn back to people that need your help and fish them. And that was, those were the ideas. But I love the fact that, well, I don't love it. It was an interesting fact that it was, the idea was written in the Greek culture way before Jesus used it. Oftentimes, well, I could go on about that, but I'm not. Here we go. We're moving on.
You know what, though, Monty? What I like is follow me requires commitment.
Yeah.
And then you can become. No, I will make you.
I will make you. Yes. I will mold you. I will shape you.
But you got to be.
Yeah, you got to come and follow if you're going to be molded. Yes. Good idea, Mike. Very, very nice. Absolutely. And we know these things. A lot of this is review, but we're starting from the entry point of the Gospels. We're going to work through the book. Things will get harder. The call, to be honest with you, a lot of people, and there'll be people in this room that might miss the call of God. There are times, and this is just a fact, Christians oftentimes, they might hear the voice of God in something, but are just too fearful to respond in the right way. Don't think that it can't happen to us. It's a very prideful thing to think that we will always make the right response to a holy God. I mean, think about it. If God were to tell you to go sacrifice one of your children today, would you make the right response? You know? Yeah. Huh?
Some days I'd be glad.
With the teenagers, right? The teenagers? Come on, we're going for a ride. Allison?
Which child is it?
Yeah, yeah. Not Cat.
When you say call, are you referring to really just the Lord speaking?
Mm-hmm.
Just really obedience.
Well, yes. Well, no. Okay, good. I love the question. Yes, yeah, sometimes I use a term and I just expect everybody's thinking about a term the same exact way. Here's the way God has called me into certain things, and he's going to show me how many times I've missed him. I've never believed I've missed God, right? I mean, I would never say, well, I missed God's call. Now some people will, they'll realize when they at the end of their life that they missed something God wanted them to do and they said no. But like when I went into ministry, I spent a month in prayer, and it was a radical change for my life. And but I fasted and I prayed and I knew God was calling me into ministry, and it didn't make any sense. And all my counselors said, don't do it. I mean, seriously, my wife was like really freaked out about the whole idea because I was going to have to quit my job, blah, blah, blah. Some of you people in this room know what that's like. But yet I knew in my heart of hearts that I was supposed to. And so that's what I'm talking about. The idea of, yes, yeah. All of a sudden you're faced with a challenge. You know, to do something that God, you feel, has put on your heart to do. And then, but yet you're struggling, or we're struggling to obey because of the challenging conditions that it presents to our lives. Now, sometimes God will put on our hearts, hey, go apologize to somebody you were sharp with. Like Jeff, I asked him if I owed him an apology Saturday. And I did give him an apology. He didn't think it was genuine. And it might not have been, Jeff, I don't know, but I'm going to try again. I do apologize if I offended Jeff. So I do that publicly. And I'm not even joking, actually. But sometimes God may ask us to apologize, you know. And that's the Holy Spirit leading us. But I'm talking about more of the life-changing events. I call those the call of God. You're sitting here. They're sitting here doing their job. They know who Jesus is. And Jesus says, come. And they say, we're gone. Immediate. That happens in the lives of Christians all over the world often. Now, how often? I don't know. How often has it happened to you? I have no idea. But yet, don't be surprised if it does happen. And then here's the gumption. You got to be prepared on the front end to say, here I am, God, send me. If you're not prepared, you might say, no, send another. Jeff.
That was kind of my question. Do you think that call happens when we're not, when we're maybe too turned inward, or we're in a funk?
Yes, absolutely. I've heard, you know, and that's a thing. That's a good point, because a lot of times people say, well, God told me to do this. God told me to do that. You see that in very young Christians especially. God told me to do this. God told me to. And then the next month they're doing the exact opposite. And it's like, and then they've heard from God again, you know. God only wanted you to do that for 2.5 weeks, I see. You know, and so I talk about this stuff with great care. Because I'm not saying every time I thought I heard the voice of God that I did. I believe I did. Now when I get to heaven, it's going to be proven whether I did. Or whether I dreamt it up. Or maybe I put more weight into something than I said it was God, but it wasn't. So I don't have all the answers to all these ideas. But what I will say is, God does still call, I believe, people to do radical things in life at times. And be prepared if he calls you to do something radical. Be prepared if you know you've heard the voice of God that you'll be a yes.
Wouldn't you say that maybe if it's something that the Lord's calling you into, that it's not like a one and done, I missed that opportunity. I said no, I missed that opportunity. I just think about like
yes,
a time in my life I was clearly being called to go into full-time ministry. I said, that's too hard. No, thank you. Chose something else. And the Lord, like, it was relentless, like, over and over again until I was like, okay, I'm going to quit this. I'm going to go to this because that's clearly what you want.
Yes, I think you're right. I think there, you know, who can speak for God in these matters? It's a very dangerous thing, you know, so I'm just giving, like, my opinion. But absolutely, I think that happens. And I think God has a way, like Jonah, sometimes he'll bring a big fish and swallow you, you know, and he'll make you do what he wants. But there are some times where, you know, the disciples would go up to Jesus, I want to follow you. He said, great, let the dead bury the dead. You're not going to your father's funeral. And people are like, whoa, that's too much. Yeah, so, I mean, I don't think it's like clear cut. You can't always say it's this or that because God responds in different ways to different people.
The one thing that we can be assured of is if God calls you to do something, he prepares the way for it to happen.
Yes.
It's not like you have to go make it happen.
Yes.
He called you to do something that he prepared for you ahead of time.
Good. And where do we find the scriptural basis for that? There's a big verse that you always ought to remember in regard to that. And it kind of ties, y'all tie together with it. Ephesians what? Helper? 2:10. Very good. Ephesians 2:10. Let's turn to it, matter of fact. Well, hey, she pulled it out of there. She pulled it out of there. Oh, good. Yeah, a lot of people will quote Ephesians 2:8 and 9, but I think you ought to keep quoting till you get through 10. Because it does talk about, so you've heard this a lot, for by grace you have been saved through faith, and that not of yourself. It is a gift of God, not of works, lest anyone should boast. For why does God save us? We are his workmanship, created in Christ Jesus for good works, which God prepared beforehand that we should walk in them.
And that's what I was going to, it kind of goes off of what you just said, but, and I don't, it sounds like you're specifically talking about when God calls, initially kind of calls people into ministry or something. But when I was a teenager, it was interesting when he will, even when you're not able to respond properly to something he's called you to do that's radical,
mm-hmm.
he'll give you what you need. When he told me as a teenager to leave home, I was not prepared for that at all, to leave my brothers and my family. It's like I didn't even fully get what he was saying, and the pressure just kept, and then I knew he wanted me to do it, and I wasn't unwilling, but I don't know, it's like it just happened, and I almost just got almost carried along through all of that
because
I couldn't mentally, emotionally, there was just so much. I was already a believer and everything, you know, but so he'll give us the ability to do what he's asked us to do even when we just really can't.
Yeah, and I don't,
or just like,
again, I want to say that here's what I want to make sure. I think that happens all the time, but I want to say that my experience may not be your experience with how God works in your life. And I don't want to say that God always works a certain way and it always works out. I actually don't believe that. And I believe there's a scriptural basis. There's plenty of proof. He tells the rich man, go sell everything you got and then come follow me. Why? That's your idol. You can't follow me till you get rid of your idol. Yeah, so I think there's no one size fits all, but hearing these experiences can add confidence to us and realize that, hey, he might test our emotions in a call. He might test our idols where he's telling us to leave something we hold dear. And it could be anything. It could be our beautiful home that we just built, our beautiful business we spent so much time on. You just never know what it might be. And I'm not saying God always tells us to do something radical. I'm not even saying that either. Sometimes God just, you're exactly where you ought to be, doing your business or doing your work. But I would say this, that, and this gets into my next point, that becoming a fisher of people is the ultimate goal for every Christian. If that's not our focus, wherever we're doing business, wherever we're doing our job and are going to school, then we don't have a proper focus, because that is our main mission as Christians, to actually become sold out disciples, where we would say, "Here I am, God, send me," no matter what. And until we've arrived to that condition in our heart and in our minds, look no further. What would hold you back? That's probably your idol. If you're not ready, you don't like that point?
No, well, that's, you're stepping on toes.
Well, I know, but, you know, God steps on all of our toes, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, whatever would hold us back from saying, "Yes, Lord, here I am, send me," oftentimes you're looking at probably your greatest object of worship other than God. Mm-hmm. And I'd love to sugarcoat it and make it easy, but, yeah. But some people could walk away from their business like that, or move to North Carolina, just like that. Mm-hmm. Or leave home, leave family, just like that. But others could struggle with one or all of those. Mike?
I was just looking at this for good work. So you hear all that, "Well, I need to know what God's will is."
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just going to hang around the house, not do anything.
Yeah.
I get a telegram or something.
Good point. God's will. That's a good point, Mike.
While we go doing good works and walking in them.
Yep.
Pursue peace with all men and godliness, for without which,
that's right,
no one will see the Lord.
There is an love your neighbor as yourself, love God. That's a minimum standard for our lives, and we're always supposed to be doing that part of God's will, no matter where we're at. And I think there's freedom. I think when we're loving God and loving people, I think we have a lot of freedom in that. But I'm not going to say to just be comfortable in that freedom, that God would never ask something difficult from you. We have the whole Bible to see that God was always asking difficult things from people. You know, lay on your side for a year. Cook your food over a human dung. I mean, God, really? Did I hear that right? I need to fast and pray a little longer. Okay, you can use cow manure. I'm so offended by that. I mean, hey, we could go on and on. Let me tell you, if you were in the OT, the original gangster, and you got the call of God, you're like, "Oh boy, what's this going to entail?"
Yeah.
That's what I would have been thinking.
I'm supposed to marry
you. I'm going to be a prophet? Oh.
Really?
What, yeah, I got to go marry a prostitute.
That's what I would have had.
Like the worst prostitute. Yeah. You know, not a prostitute of prostitutes.
Keep chasing her down.
Yeah, and go, woo her. Go woo her. Like, "God, here he is. Send him."
Yeah, here I am. Send him.
Yeah, I never see it. You know, a lot of times as American Christians, we want to just make our whole Christian life a cakewalk.
We want it to fit
the culture, our ideas. It's just easy peasy. Let's just go to church. That's all God's ever going to require from us. And I'm saying, no, time out, not so fast. You never know. We have to make sure that we understand that God has sometimes some great purpose for us. And it may be the most disaster thing we could ever face. And he's like, "Go face that disaster. I want that disaster for my will and purpose. Go do it." And we might say in a human mind, "No, I'm not willing. I'm not willing to go fail, first of all. And I'm not willing to go do that thing that you want me to do, God. Pass the buck to someone else." And I tell you, the call is often found when you see a need. When you're walking through your life and you say, "There's a need for this to happen." And then it's always, "Well, there's a need. Who is going to go?"
Yeah.
Send somebody else. Let me talk about the need, and I'll get people...
And
they go and solve it. I talk about it, they go. That's how we do things. I hate to be honest, but that's, you know, it's in all of us. That's in me. You know, I'm not throwing rocks. We all have these fears, you know. that God, can I really walk up to Mount Sinai and not die? Can I do that? You can.
I always say, and you said about it, God is different for every person.
Absolutely.
But one common denominator is it will be painful.
It could be painful.
More likely it's going to be.
A lot of times it will. A lot of times it will. Yeah, well, carrying your cross, that's right. I mean, really, you know, you've got a personal cross. Jesus, that's how Jesus described it. And Rick and I always joke in ministry because we've worked together for a long time. You know when you're carrying a cross. You, if you're looking around saying, am I carrying a cross? You're not carrying a cross. God's asking every one of us on some level to live a life of sacrifice.
Amen.
On some level. I saw a hand out of the corner of my eye.
Oh,
Allison, did you still have it?
I was just thinking when we studied John, something that Tori just kept bringing out is just how Jesus kept putting his finger on the area. He called it in there, poking him in the eye. But I think the part of it was really just drawing attention to whatever was, whether it was a belief, whether it was something they were holding on to between them and the Lord, or maybe it was, you know, with the Pharisees, you know, their false
righteousness,
standing, and really even that was a choice of theirs.
Oh yeah.
But all of that, and then thinking about it being painful, and I was just thinking about Abraham. Why did he call? Well, you just think if Abraham was promised that son, and he'd been thinking, you know, that son probably meant so much. That was the one thing. And I wonder, you know, if the point is not for it, like you said, it is, but the point maybe is not to be painful, but the point is really for us to overcome what is between our wholehearted following the Lord, to give that up.
Yep, yep.
You know, so that there's not a comparing.
Yeah, I like what Campus Outreach teaches, you know, they do this in their own disciples, is that, you know, they identify idols. Approval,
yeah.
What are they?
Well, the two, it's
approval.
Well, it all stems from pride and
right.
belief, but
control, comfort,
approval,
and another one.
Security.
Yeah, security, probably, or something like that.
Yeah, I can't remember.
Well, nevertheless, I mean, it's just a lesson I remember them talking about, and I'm like, that's so true. And it ties into what Allison's saying and what we've said is, you know, we all tend, you know, that's why we're not supposed to have any gods before God. We tend to raise things up, something. Family, security. You know, women struggle with security a lot. That's just their nature. You know, men struggle with, you know, I want to take risk, unnecessary risk, you know, to prove myself. So we struggle in different ways. But yet those are sometimes idols. They can become idols. And I always love that because I'm like, that is so true. And that's what we see in Scripture. So whether it's my riches or my family, and I'm not saying God call, you know, the Bible says command those who are rich to share. You can be rich, it's not sinful. Just don't make money your idol. You know, and there's a real danger in that. Money especially is a big draw for people to, you know, find their security in that, they find their importance in that. Well, now we've crossed over into idolatry with money.
Same can be said of poverty as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, anything. We're good at making anything an idol, really. I mean, it can be anything. Coin collection. I mean, you know, just I could go on and on. I mean, we make our idols, and we've got to be cognizant of the things that we hold dear that we're not willing to give up for God. And if there is something there, we need to be proactive in saying, God, help me release that. And if you ever ask me to do that, that I would be willing to say, here I am. I stand on the Sea of Galilee saying yes. You know, my Sea of Galilee, so to speak. So, a couple of quotes. We'll close with this. Hey, we got one third of the way through my notes. This is awesome. I just have to review this next week instead of prepare another lesson. But no, I'm just joking. I'll bring something. But let me read a couple of quotes. I love this quote. The many traits the disciples exhibit spring from two conflicting traits. The disciples are at once loyal and uncomprehending. On the one hand, the disciples are loyal. Jesus summoned them to follow him, and they immediately left behind their former way of life and gave him their total allegiance. On the other hand, The disciples are uncomprehending, understanding fully neither the identity nor the destiny of Jesus, nor at all the essential meanings of discipleship. They forsake Jesus during his passion. So his point is, oftentimes when God calls us, it might not make sense. We don't understand why in the world that would be placed on our heart to do something. Oftentimes we won't know the end result. And it's a journey. And then those of us that have been saved a while, if you've got a few things right with the Lord, you look back and you realize, well, God had me do this, A, B, and C, so I'd be prepared for D and E. And it's not only till you experience God to some degree that you start to get more of a toolkit, so to speak, of how God works in miraculous ways that we could never predict. So I love that quote for that. Do we have any closing comments or questions,
about
ideas?
Physical, I think I struggle, and I see in studying the Word that it's all this physical. The woman at the well, oh, well, give me this running water. You know, they're looking at physical. You know? And the disciples, hey,
yeah.
We're going to rule. He is stepping up. Rome is out. We got it. I don't know who's going to set his right hand. I think I should. And, you know, you got all this stuff about physical kingdom. Yep. And it's spiritual, you know.
Yes.
And how many were at the cross?
Yeah.
Zero. You know, all the rest of them, like, well, yeah. We're doomed.
Donnie?
Just a comment, too, to be very careful about claiming God's will for something you've already kind of decided to do.
Isn't that convenient?
And kind of validate or make a justification using his will. And I think that's a very bad.
Yeah, I would just, and to that point, I always try to be careful. And I think everyone should, because we can use God's name in vain. To speak for God where he has not spoke is to use his name in vain. So always, you should always say, I believe God is leading me to do this. Because we do have to take steps of faith. If God calls you to do something, it's going to take... Faith always has to be in the mix. Because without faith, it's impossible to please God. But yet, there's a good caution there. I believe God's leading me to do this. But know in your heart that don't be that wishy-washy person who's pulling Christ down. Because one week you say one thing, the next week you say another. The next week you say another. It's like this schizophrenic kind of God's leading me all over the place and has no cohesion to any of these ideas. And I see that a lot, and it's heartbreaking. So I believe God's leading me to this. I would just caution all of us to remember, let us be careful to say God is leading me to do this. Because
it's God's will, because you, in James it said, you know, it's okay, we're going to go do this, we're going to do that.
Yes.
Yeah, if the Lord's will. No.
Right. If the Lord wills, we will do this.
This is our plan,
mm-hmm.
And it might line up.
Yes.
But the other way is, I need your stamp of approval. I'm doing this. In your name, I'm doing it.
Right.
I need your approval.
And that ties back into what Donnie... Yeah, and so oftentimes the charismatic person in us, not trying to use that in a negative way, we want to put the Lord's stamp on it in a, hey, I don't need faith anymore, I know. And, I would just invite you to make sure you stick to that if that's the case. So, well, and that's what Jesus said, right? Count the cost. And a lot of that passage deals with discipleship. Count the cost before you build the tower. Make sure you're willing, because love your neighbor as yourself is the bottom tier. If you want to go higher, if I want to be the servant, that's a tower. Do I have what it takes to stay in that level of service? Or am I going to be the person who started to build and then people mock and say, yeah, he said he was going to do A, B, and C for God, and then he didn't even complete A. So counting the cost, partially that's on us to decide in our own heart and mind. Are we ready to do above what is required? That's what Piper said. Are we ready to do above what is required? And oftentimes Christians say, no, I just want to focus on what God requires. And that's okay. But if you say, I'm going to go to the next level, if I'm going to step out on faith to bigger degrees, make sure you understand what that might cost you.
And that varies by personality.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Absolutely it does. And different circumstances, for heaven's sake.
Oh,
I mean, if God called me to Iran, that's going to take a little more commitment than going home this afternoon. Right?
Noah was building a boat and people didn't even know what rain was.
Yeah, 120 years. So, absolutely. Good comment. So, let's pray.